Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, August 28th, 2015. And with me today for a little one-on-one time, I have John Martellaro. How are you, John?
I am good. This is going to be fun.
Well, it's always fun when you're on the show. So it's just a given. Yeah. And I'm glad to have you here because you have good insight on Apple. And that comes from the fact that you actually worked for Apple for a while.
Mm-hmm.
That, and you're just really smart and very observant. So I wanted to have you on because the change that people have been talking about happening in Apple's retail stores with iPods has happened. And that is that instead of having big displays out for iPods, they're now on the shelves like other accessories are, even though they're not actually an accessory. And I've seen some people saying that this is the end of the iPod and Apple is just phasing it out. And I was thinking, well, maybe not. And I think that you actually have some thoughts on this too, just a hunch.
Yeah, I do. I don't think that it is the end of the iPod. I mean, it's the typical meme on the internet that when Apple makes a move that you jump to conclusions. But I think the reality is that the iPod is just such a useful device. I mean, if you look at Jim Tanis's bar chart that came from a Simcoe on the relative contribution of different Apple products,
mm-hmm.
The iPod is way down there, but so is the Mac. And if you looked at the revenue from the Mac contributing to Apple's total revenue from the phone, you would say, well, Apple's going to discontinue the Macintosh too. I think because the iPod is so useful in so many ways, in the console, in the center console of your car connected to your stereo system, or to take out jogging when you don't want to have a heavy iPhone connected or flopping around, or in certain environments where cell phones are not allowed, but you still want to tuck one in your pocket and listen to music, mm-hmm. and lots of other cases, the iPod is just so darn useful that the pushback Apple would get from discontinuing it, callously discontinuing it, I think would not be worth it. It's still contributing to Apple sales. It's a beloved product. But as was pointed out, it's taking up a little too much shelf space. Apple's got new products. There's a new Apple TV coming along. Apple's got watches to sell. So Apple needs to rearrange the store a little bit to make room. And that part of it kind of makes me happy too, to see Apple continuously refreshing the stores, continuously thinking about the customer's experience, always improving, continuous improvement, as they say in the aerospace industry. Mm-hmm. And I like to see that. If you shop in the mall a lot, you may be accustomed to certain stores that looks like they've been the same for years. But remember the old days when you walked into the Apple store and there were shelves and shelves of software along the middle, and that was the big thing. And
yep.
Steve Jobs had his videos.
Yeah,
he said, you know, if you build more software, we'll build more shelves. You know, that's a time that's come and gone. And so it's nice to see Apple constantly thinking about the retail environment and responding to customers and feedback from, you know, the store employees and from the customers about the experience. And this movement to the shelf is simpler for the customer. As Jim's article points out, you can just walk into the store and use your phone and pull one off the shelf and pay for it. Or you can talk to a sales rep and do Apple Pay, whatever you want to do. You can just grab the one you want. And so that makes the sales experience easier, less friction. But I wouldn't read too much into these nice little devices just suddenly being relegated to the shelf and then being relegated to not at all. I think there's still more life in the iPod, in my opinion.
I think you're right. And now the perspective that I bring to this is as someone that did for years worked in retail. And I worked in, or for several different companies. And the companies that I worked for that had the best success in selling products were the companies that were moving product around and were taking products that otherwise weren't selling as well, but were still selling well, and moved them to an appropriate place in the store so that they could highlight the products that they needed to when they needed to. And the stores that I worked at where that didn't happen, where everything was very static, that was a problem.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So I have two examples. There's a company, I believe they're still around, Brookstone. And I worked for that company long ago for quite a while. And in that store, they would change out the front window display to highlight products. And then they had a couple of their display tables near the front that would have the products they were highlighting. Everything else in the store tended to stay in the same place. And what I noticed with that layout was that the area where they continually swapped out products, that was the area where the best sales came from. And then I also worked for REI for quite a while, and REI moves stuff around all the time, and it's because they know they have products people want, but there are certain products that people need to see right now. So, like a seasonal thing.
Sure.
Yeah, you have bicycles near the front in spring, and then in fall you move the skis near the front. And it doesn't mean that bicycles are going away. It just means that that the focus now is more on skis. And I know this is a very loose analogy to what Apple is doing, because the iPod isn't going to move back up onto the interactive display shelves. It's going to stay on the I don't want to call it blister pack shelves, because Apple doesn't go for blister packs, but on the packaged product shelves that they have in the back half of the store.
Well, I think you brought up an interesting point I hadn't thought of before, and that is the psychology of the customer's perception about the activity in the store. When you see a store that's constantly changing, moving things around, things are happening. People must be buying things. There's new products that are available. The store is responding to the customer. That has to have a psychological effect on the customer. Whereas when you go to another store and you see the same old stuff, you kind of figure that they're just doing the same old thing, and they're not really engaged with the customer, and maybe their stuff isn't selling so well. So I think that's my offhand armchair thought about the psychology of that situation.
And let me rephrase that. That seems very reasonable to me. And another thing to look at is where in the store, not only just away from where they were before, but where they are now. Look at where the iPods are, and the location in the store. Like, if you look at the photos that we have in our article that Jim Tanis wrote, you'll see that that the iPods are on a shelf on the right. Now, what I was told long ago when I got into retail was that part of the psychological effect of laying out a store is based on the direction of blood flow in our bodies. So when you walk into a store, you are inclined to turn to the right and work your way through the store counterclockwise. And I was told that's because of the direction of blood flow in our bodies. I don't know if that part's true, but I do know that when people go into retail stores, they look to the right, by and large. And if you look at where the iPods are in the store, they, at least in the stores that we've seen so far, they are on the right wall. So you go in the store and you work to the back, and they're on a side of the store where it's still more of a forethought as opposed to an afterthought. Look at what's on the left side wall. It tends to be more of the third-party accessories, not Apple products.
Well, the other thing I noticed from Adam's photo, to continue the armchair analysis, is that there's some cables and earbuds at the top, and there's keyboards and AirPods at the bottom, but the iPods are at eye level pretty much, right there, very hard to miss.
And that's not by chance.
I'm sure.
No, you put the products that you want people to grab at eye level, and then you put related products just above and just below, but then the farther up and the farther down you go, the less relevant the products will be.
Well, I guess that means the AirPods are not very relevant.
Well, they're not very relevant in the sense that they're not an iPod.
Yeah, and they're probably not bought as frequently.
Right. And yeah, if you go in the next time you go into your grocery store, I'm turning everyone into retail analysts here. So listeners, you're totally welcome. Next time you go into a store, even the grocery store, start paying attention to product placement and look at the products that as you go down the aisle are at eye level. And those tend to be the products the grocery store wants you to buy, the products that tend to be more popular anyhow. So it's going to be the bigger name brands, typically the more expensive products. And when you look lower, you'll see similar products, but they're not going to be as high priced. And when you go up, you'll see other products that are related, typically. But it's at eye level shelf. That's the money spot in a grocery store, in other retail stores too.
There might be some thermodynamics going on here too, because I've noticed that in the grocery stores I shop at, when you go in and turn to the natural right, that tends to be the breads and the produce. And as you work around to the left side of the store, which is more or less on your way out, that's where the dairy section is. And so those items are not going to sit in your cart and get warm. And the produce and the bread can be there for a long time. So maybe there's some thermodynamics going on.
Do you shop at Safeway?
I shop at a King Supers.
Interesting. Okay. I was just curious because what I've seen is that a lot of stores used to be kind of haphazard, meaning you could go into the same store name in a different location and not be able to figure out where anything is. But that's been changing over time. And I've noticed that stores are being set up more so that I don't know if I'd call it a logical flow exactly, but if you look at it as a big ring, you can start at one end and work your way through and come back around to the same point you were and have everything you need just from going through an outer ring, because there's a lot of products on end caps too, so you don't even have to go down aisles. The cold thing, I had noticed, and this is very frustrating for me, especially when I lived in Estes Park, the cooler section was not in a good place.
Mm.
So you could do all your shopping, but if you wanted to save your freezer items for the last, then you had to backtrack to go and get that. And yeah, so it's like bakery stuff was on the far right, then you had produce on the far left, but then in the middle, in a weird place that backed up to dish detergents and stuff. Now you had a freezer.
In my King Supers, the freezer section is on the far left with the dairy, so that's also one of the last things you're going to pick up on the way out, like ice cream. It's pretty clever.
Yeah, see, that's a smart setup. And Apple is a master at smart setups. Do you like how I brought this back around to Apple?
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Thank you. Apple is a master of the smart setups. I mean, look at the photos that Adam took for us. Adam Christensen, by the way, Adam totally rocks. And if the name sounds familiar to you, it's because he's been on TDO before, and his podcast is the MacCast. You totally need to go check that out. But anyhow, so the photos that Adam took, there's one where it's a little bit farther back, so you can see what's around the iPod display. And off to the left of the iPod, there's smart home stuff. And that's exactly the right place for that, because it fits in nicely. You can do smart home control from an iPod Touch, right? And there are other products that are right there, like an Airport Extreme base station, that fit in with a smart home setup.
Right.
I mean, Apple lined these things up not because this is where they happen to fit in the store, but because this is the right place for these products to be in relation to each other.
You know, another thing I like about what Apple's done is the removal of the smart sales displays on the iPads. I had investigated a while back about people touching these iPad displays and, a transmittal of germs and so on from customer to customer. And I did a little bit of informal searching, and I discovered that they clean those iPad displays every night with a special disinfectant liquid. Mm-hmm. And that made me feel a lot better. But when you consider the expense and the maintenance, and everybody coming in and touching those things after they've had ice cream or whatever.
Or picked their nose.
Yeah. So I think that's another smart move, is to figure out how to do away with that. And it's just part of that continuing improvement process where Apple constantly rethinks what's going on. So, and it makes more room on the table for other products, or a richer selection of products, because now they have multiple MacBooks, they've got MacBook Pros, MacBook Airs, MacBooks, watches, So having the sales display information on the product itself is smart.
Yep, I agree. Although I do already miss having those interactive iPad kiosks by products. I really liked those, but I get why they're gone, And some listeners have pointed out to me, and rightly so, that sometimes I get a little stubborn about change. And in this case, while I'm sad about the change, I also welcome it because I get why they made it, and it totally makes sense. So listeners, look at that. I'm getting a little better about accepting change.
Yay.
Hey, wow, we're like almost completely out of time. But I wanted to loop back to something that you talked about a few days ago, because you have new info, and this is the troubleshooting that you've been doing on getting sunrise and sunset to show up properly on your Apple Watch.
It's a new theory. A lot of people apparently have been having a problem with it from looking at the page views of that article. Apple Watch has been great for me, but what I noticed by and by over the last few months is that very often my sunrise and sunset time were dashes. And so I started fiddling with this in earnest a while back, and I found multiple technical articles and theories. And the best one I found was that it's depending on location services, so that it knows where you are. And so I thought I had it nailed, and I wrote an article about how to make sure your location services is turned on for the Apple Watch face, so the Apple Watch face knows your location. And mm-hmm. from your location, it can calculate what your local time of sunrise and sunset is, either calculate or look it up from tables or whatever. So I thought I had the problem nailed, and then the other day I noticed the dashes were back. So I thought, there's something more going on here. So I went and took a look at my iPhone, and I looked at Apple's standard weather app that comes with the phone, the one with the blue sky and the cloud. And I took a look at the timeline where it displays the sunset. And lo and behold, it's the same icon, the little half yellow sphere with the arrow going up for sunrise and down for sunset. And I thought, well, I know Apple uses the same standard icons for Cocoa Touch development, but maybe because it's the same icon on the app, the weather app on the phone, as on the watch, maybe there's some connection there. It's getting it from the same source. And the weather app certainly has to know your location in order to calculate the same information. So I got a hunch that I needed to do something with background app refresh. Mm-hmm. So I went and I took a look at settings and general and scroll down a little bit under usage, and there was background app refresh. And in order to save my battery, I had them all killed. I had the master switch off. So what I did was I turned the background app refresh on, killed all the other ones manually, but left the weather app able to update in the background.
Oh, right. Okay, so the way it was working before was the only time weather was actually updating was when it was the frontmost application, meaning
exactly.
It was the app you were looking at on your screen.
Exactly.
At that point, it could update your sunrise and sunset as well.
If the theory is correct, yes, exactly. So I turned that weather app, background app refresh on, and I haven't had a problem for about 18 hours now. Solid. So,
all right, so that's another thing to check.
It's a theory, and I'm going to continue to monitor and see if that additional item is what's necessary to ensure that your iPhone is constantly able to refresh the sunrise and sunset time on your watch, even in the background.
All right, sounds good. And I'm looking forward to hearing what you discover. And we're out of time, so we're going to have to wrap up.
That went fast.
Yes, it went really fast. Well, it did for us. I hope it did for our listeners, too. Listeners, thank you so much for being here this week. You all rock. I love that you keep showing up and listening. And I'm glad that we are able to give you some info that you can use. I'm also really glad that you guys interact with me, because that's a lot of fun. Now, a lot of people have been sending in their comments on if John is right about permission repairs, or if Kelly is right about permission repairs. And so next week, we're going to take a look at those results. And then based on what you guys say, we'll determine which one of them is actually right. So thank you for those comments. Keep them coming in. John, thank you for being here today.
You're very welcome. It was fun.
It was a fun conversation, and we brought up some of my old retail experience. That was unexpected. All right. Thank you to everyone again for being here. We'll see you again on Monday.